I can't get it for you wholesale. The $20,000 skirt that was also a defibrillator. Just kidding, it's only a skirt. In Mahogany, Diana Ross, playing the world's greatest supermodel-turned-designer, has stayed entirely too long at the fair, and is sick to death of all the falsehood and decadence. Her affair with mercurial photographer Tony Perkins is on the skids. At a party, surrounded by her brittle, beautiful, shallow friends, she drips melted wax onto her torso, laughing mirthlessly all the while. I watched rapt, having been taken to see it by my best friend Mark Satok and his family. That same year, while handing hors d'oeuvres out around my parents' living room, I said to a friend of the family, "That's a nice dress. Is it an Albert Nippon?" It was a rhetorical question. I already knew that it was. I was 10 years old. My knowledge of fashion hasn't really advanced much in the intervening 30 years. At this point, I am less informed than the average in-style reader. Still, I have been chosen to go to Paris to cover the couture collections for a fashion magazine, armed with little more than a notebook and my febrile movie-fueled imagination that keeps on sending the same derivative scenario sloshing across my brain pan. An impoverished seamstress, her fingers bloody from hours of painstaking needlework, is being dressed down by an outraged couturier. "I asked for camellias. These are not camellias," he says, ripping out the stitches. "Do it again." He flings the garment at her, an errant bugle bead catching her right in the eye. She weeps softly. The designer's teacup poodle, Salminio, yaps agitatedly throughout. In Paris, I will learn a great deal over the course of the week. I will see the reality behind the glamorous facade. I will learn about cut and sewing and artistry. Most of all, I will learn that the old pronouncement attributed to the Duchess of Windsor, Wallace Simpson, one of the world's worst people ever, is, not surprisingly, wrong. It is distinctly possible to be both too rich and too thin. The boondoggle starts before I even get there. The magazine is flying everybody business class. The front cabin before takeoff is a flirty cocktail party in full swing, but the joviality conceals a slightly nicked sordidness. The sofa is starting to show some wear. The upholstery on the arms and back is shiny and worn, and the seat belts between the cushions and the heavy metal bolt securing it to the floor of the aircraft kind of ruins the Playboy After Dark effect. Ditto the bar stools, which taper down to industrial-sized rivets in the carpet. It gives the place a minimum security prison feel, as though it was designed to withstand some potential upset over and above mere flight. Someone getting liquored up, breaking a flight attendant's arm and defecating on the drinks cart, for example. I scan the crowd for a likely candidate. As we begin to taxi, all those felicities of groundedness, the vase of flowers on the bar, the magazine's fan just so on the coffee table, the shining racks of gleaming glassware, are whisked away and stowed, the speakeasy converting to a revival meeting moments before the cops rush in. The first-class purser, a very handsome young man, comes by and kneels beside me. "Hi, I'm Nigel. I've been so busy I haven't had a chance to come and say hello." He says with a tone of incredulity, not that he should be busy, but that it should prevent him from greeting me. Me, after all we've been through. This kind of friendly service from someone as painfully good-looking as Nigel just makes me feel shy and unworthy. I barely glance at him when I mutter hello. He probably thinks I'm an asshole, although he couldn't be friendlier as he hands me an extensive menu. I can order anything from it at any time in as much quantity as I like. It's all about unchecked plenty here. I probably won't avail myself. Given the fact that I'm somewhat obsessed with food, eating in front of other people is always somewhat embarrassing, like being caught in an illicit moment of arousal. And I am paranoid about spilling. My usual uniform of t-shirt, jeans, and sneakers will not do at the shows, apparently, and in order to limit my luggage to a carry-on, I have boarded the plane in my suit. I will have to wear it the next day, and many days after that, too, so I'm trying to stay wrinkle and stain-free. I sit up straight, dressed like a mortician, rigid as a corpse, in what would otherwise be a really commodious seat. At about 3 a.m., I am startled by a great yawp of laughter from a man who has been drinking way too much. In his mid-60s and dressed in the charcoal-gray fleecy pajamas provided for him by the airline, He is trying to make time with a young woman with a spiky bleached do. This might be his lucky night, because she slouches toward him and loudly confides,
"I thought I'd sleep, but I guess I'll just get pissed instead."
A flight attendant steps forward and tells them that she has bad news. The bar is closed. Unfortunately, international law dictates that they have to stop serving 4 hours before landing, she explains. The man is too drunk to call her out on this patent lie. The blonde seems not to care and staggers back to her seat, her manifest destiny of skankiness suspended for the moment. Scanning the man's face and body language and persuaded that he is not belligerent, the flight attendant walks away, leaving him standing there, still trying to formulate his response.